Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the
2007
NFL
season. Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Got your woolens out? Got your mittens out, your heavy shawl, your big, thick ski jacket, maybe a ski cap, maybe skis. Oh, looks like we're in for a little snow on Sunday. Yes, indeedy. Gary, you ready for that? You going to have the snowsuit on?
Can't wait.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Got to be a lot of fun. We welcome you inside the playbook for Wednesday here, game week 15, game number 14 for the Patriots. It is Jets week. And it is, of course, the, revenge, whatever you want to say, game against the Jets. Although I know that the players are doing their best to sort of downplay that this week, as we've talked about already. We will, by the way, hear from the players in the locker room a little bit later on in the program today. But just in light of some of the new items that are becoming known to us, some of the media reports that are out there in this whole Patriots-Jets thing, let me sort of set all of it aside for just a moment and say, isn't it wonderful that we actually now have a bona fide rivalry going? I mean, there's, you talk about rivalries, and we talk about the rivalry between the Patriots and the Colts, and how the Patriots and Colts earlier this year maybe supplanted the Cowboys and Redskins as the new in rivalry in the National Football League. We really haven't had a good one since the Cowboys and the Redskins, I think, probably back in the 70s and in early 80s. And yet, even the Patriots and Colts, to an extent, Bill Polian aside, of course, lacked the fervor, lacked the hatred that the Cowboys and Redskins did. Even though, yes, I think you'd have to say that it is a rivalry, simply because either team can beat either side, and we've seen that over the last few years. But this matchup between the Patriots and the Jets, now, not so much a rivalry at this present moment, maybe except for in passion only, because the Jets are 3-10. But, you know, and because for it to be a true rivalry, I think you realize you have to have one team capable of beating the other at pretty much any given time. Now, of course, you will recall that the Jets did beat the Patriots at Gillette Stadium a year ago. In fact, the Jets and Eric Mangini reveled in that win a year ago. And it came as a surprise to a lot of fans, not just Patriots fans. And so in that regard, that game probably served as the catalyst for what's going on right now. Little did we know, of course, that it would appear that, you know, during that regular season game, it was either that one or during the playoff game, in which the Jets came back and got beat by the Patriots, that there was a Jets employee doing the very same thing to the Patriots that the Patriots had done to the Jets earlier this year, and that is videotaping someone who was expelled from the stadium. And again, the details are not exactly clear based on the reports in Newsday and getting some other things on ProFootballTalk.com and some other items that are out there in and amongst the various internet sites, and trying to research this and talk to some people. And as Fred mentioned a little while ago, you know, the guys talked about it a little bit yesterday. I'm kind of looking at it from a little bit different perspective here today. Only the fact that, number one, it certainly doesn't make what the Patriots did right, and I'm not about to say that. However, what it does say, as I discussed with Fred Kirsch just a little while ago, just a couple of minutes ago, if you're just logging on, is the fact that if there's any truth to this at all, and then after the Patriots decided just to squelch it, feeling like, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. Or maybe the Patriots knew that this was a practice they did as well, and if they brought it out, then they'd be kind of flagging themselves on this thing, which is certainly a plausible scenario. than to have Eric Mangini or Mike Tannenbaum or whoever from the Jets serve as the whistleblower in all of this just really smacks of pure, unadulterated betrayal, especially of his Mangini. And I realize he doesn't work for the Pats anymore, but now you can understand, get a little bit different perspective on why maybe the handshakes out at midfield in postgame are as cold as they are. I mean, let's face it. If your best friend, well, let's say your right-hand person at work, right? Someone who you really depend upon to get the job done day in and day out, right? Someone you've trusted company secrets with, all of a sudden ups for another opportunity. You're not going to stand in their way, right? But that other opportunity happens to be at a chief competitor of the business that you are in. And then all of a sudden you learn that your person, your friend, your cohort, your confidant has leaked company secrets to your competitor in an effort to gain an advantage on you, you, the kind person who gave them that start to begin with, and trying to use it to their advantage in order to beat you. Well, then obviously you get, a clearer picture of what this particular scenario really is all about. You know, and so to that end, that's a little alarming that this whole, if we look at it on its surface, just on the surface. Now, honestly, again, I go through this based on the fact, again, as I've always said, and I will continue to maintain, the answer is always somewhere in the middle. It's never one extreme or another. But just based on what we know on the surface, without diving into the nitty-gritty details here, based on the surface of this story, I am a little shocked. This is this is a fraternity. Coaching is a fraternity. The NFL is a fraternity. And yes, everybody tries to beat the pants off of everybody else, but that's what being in this fraternity is. And sharing company trade secrets is verboten. It's not within the spirit of the law. Now, obviously the law is subject to conjecture. Obviously the NFL has told everyone that now, and it's no longer subject to conjecture at this stage of the game. But I gotta wonder, honestly, if Eric Mangini did this in an effort to gain favor or get an advantage, or hey, all's fair in love and football, love, war, and football in that particular instance, to do that to Belichick, who gave him his start and then launched him on his path to where he is now, I'm stunned that the win at all cost scenario is as great as it is. Maybe I'm even a little naive. I'll certainly admit that at this stage of the game. I mean, I'm all for competing. And, you know, I have friends, you know, competing radio stations and television stations and different entities. And certainly I have friends who are broadcasters, you know, for teams throughout the Big East, you know, where I work. And we're friends, but, you know, hey, when the game starts, I want my team to whip up on his team just like he wants his team to whip up on my team. It's only natural. It's much more fun, makes your job that much more easy and exciting when your team is successful. Same goes here. And so you can still shake hands after the game is over and be friends. I firmly believe that. I live that every day. Every day. Every day that I got a game, I live that. The only way that it wouldn't work is if you were doing television and you're splitting right down the middle. But when you're a team broadcaster, you're a team journalist, it's different. It just is. You live, you eat, you breathe, you write, you broadcast, you talk about these guys that you cover. And, you know, hey, it'd be like me, you know, saying, well, I'm going to play it right down the middle of the road here between the Patriots and the Jets, and let's look at this game on its merits. Well, that's kind of stupid. It's kind of silly. You know, I work for the Patriots. It doesn't mean that we can't be objective in our opinions, but I work for the Patriots. I want them to do well. Makes our job that much more fun around here. So when, you know, I guess I am naive. That has to be it. I'm just a little foolish in thinking that, you know, trade secrets remain trade secrets, that you just don't spill the guts when you go off to somebody else. And that's apparently what has happened within the Jets organization. Maybe in an effort to win favor with his new employers, Eric Mangini spilled his guts and they said, huh, well, that's kind of cool. Well, let's use it against him. Well, you just can't do that. What goes around comes around. And of course, everybody seems to think that the comes around part is going to happen this Sunday. However, the weather may have a distinct something to say about the comes around part. Because if we do get, and I've heard already, upwards of 1 to 2 feet as I'm going around on the various weather sites. Weather.com was saying that. Weather Channel was saying that earlier. A couple of other weather reporters and listen to some of the local people around here are saying that if the storm projects directly toward the land, rather than heading out maybe towards the Cape and the islands and the ocean, we could get whacked with 1 to 2 feet. It could be a true nor'easter. The likely scenario as it now stands looks like it's going to track a little bit out toward the east, and I'm not a meteorologist, nor do I play one on the radio, but you know, the fact is, I think that's what everybody's hoping for, because then we'd kind of get, we'd get hit by it, but it wouldn't be, you know, I don't think it would be, you know, a foot. It might be, you know, 6 inches and a lot of slush thereafter. So we'll see what happens. But that's what we have to look forward to. So, you know, yesterday when we were talking about, when we were coming to you from New York, we were talking a little bit about what would be the better route. What would be the better scenario? A 72-3 or 63-13 game or a 38-0 game? And I think that there, the votes that we had, it seemed like 38-0 was the more popular choice, simply because you shut out the other guy. And when you shut somebody out, you shut them up. I mean, that's a punch in the nose, is what a shutout is. And that's the one thing that this Patriot team really doesn't have this year. They don't have a dominating defensive effort. They haven't punched somebody in the nose defensively. They haven't kept them out of the end zone or off the scoreboard. And so maybe, in a way, maybe this sort of plays into their favor. Because it's going to be very hard, I think, for anybody to score. If the winds are swirling, and we're already looking at, as I'm looking at the weather forecast, it looks like 25 to 35 mile per hour winds on Sunday. 25 to 35 with driving snow. And we're going to try to play a football game at 1 o'clock Eastern time in this stuff. So if that's the case, we're going to find out once and for all about whether or not the Patriots can run the football. We're certainly going to find that out. Because it seems to me that may be the only reliable way. And maybe even that won't be reliable simply because you just don't know. I mean, it will be rough. It will be slick. It will be cold. It will be slippery. Ball could end up on the ground. So, this is a unique scenario coming up this weekend. There's no doubt about it. You've got this whole, all right, well, maybe the Jets did to the Patriots what the Patriots did to the Jets first. As the New York media is reporting, allegedly. And, of course, the Jets are denying it. Patriots have no comment. We're concentrating on this game, which is fine. That's understandable. That's what they should do. They should rise above it. But it just presents an interesting case study in really what it's about to be competitive and what it's like to be in the middle of a rivalry. And so we're taking this rivalry now to a different level. It's still a rivalry, even though the Jets are not good this year, because the Jets have recently beaten the Patriots. They beat them, you know, 1, 2, 3 games ago between the two sides. So certainly the Jets are capable. But we've got, I think, true dislike. The one ingredient that most rivalries really, you know, you say it's a rivalry. Well, that's great. But is there hatred? Is there emotion? Is there dislike for the other side? And if you can answer yes to that, then that's a rivalry. I think you got a good contest if you don't have that. Doesn't mean that it's a bad game if you don't have that emotional factor, you know, played into it. But the Jets and the Patriots now has, you know, emotion. And add to that, of course, the ever omnipresent New York versus New England scenario. And you just got the makings of one doozy of a rivalry. And so now you begin to understand some of the mindset of why the Patriots fans in particular, you among them, of course, are, you know, swirling about, are like a pack of sharks swimming in the water, waiting for that first sign of blood to drip, and then you're going to be all over it. It certainly stands to be a unique scenario on Sunday by adding all of this into the equation. I don't think, and this is before, I said this yesterday on the program, I did not think that this was going to be a 60-some-odd, you know, close-to-nothing route like most people were hoping for, I suppose. I said that yesterday before we even learned about the weather possibilities. And I still think that's even more the case today. see if we can get some thoughts now from the one and only Vic Carucci, who's the senior editor for NFL.com, who joins us here inside the Playbook. Vic, great to visit with you again. Thanks for the time.
John, always a pleasure.
What do you think about this whole scenario that perhaps the Jets did to the Patriots, what the Patriots got flagged for doing to the Jets and maybe did it as early as last year?
It's interesting. I think in some regards it takes the whole story to the place that I'm guessing, you know, the Patriots don't want to see it go, which was a little bit of the, you know, okay, you see, this is what they did, and this is what we did, and see, right. They're no better than we are, and, all that sort of petty stuff that I think is unbecoming. And so I think at the end of the day, while it's interesting, it's probably not worth a whole lot of the discussion that we're going to give it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting only in the fact that the Patriots got flagged with, you know, unprecedented penalties, and yet, you know, they chose to stay silent, apparently, over the Jets' transgression a year ago when, you know, the Jets decided to blow the whistle over the Patriots' transgression this year.
Yeah. And again, as I said, I think the situation that was created by that first step in all this, put out there one of the most, I think, overblown stories of that we've seen, even though the punishment I thought was severe, and you were caught cheating as a team, as an organization, you pay the price that you have to pay, by the same token, you say, well, you want it to be the same for everyone else. Was this in fact a case where it was as clear cut? Did somebody have such evidence brought forth to the league and the league didn't act on it? Is that what this story is? I don't know enough about it, John, to say, you know, are we working with apples and apples here? You know,
sure.
Jets got punished for something because it seemed to be put together as a clear cut and dried case. If it's a case where another team is doing this and there's been suspicions that other teams are doing this but are not being punished, certainly that doesn't seem fair to see that, but is that actually the case? I don't know.
And that's
something we really may not tell me.
That's true. And something that we may not know. And I guess to that point, you know, I would find out, I would ask, I wonder if the NFL will actually kind of look into this because they don't have any knowledge because the Patriots chose not to report it a year ago. So they don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah. And that's where it's in the eye of the beholder of, okay, is it better to not report, or report what you know? Keep everything out there. Are there other things that go on? And, you know, I'm not naive. I've been around this game a long time to know that there are different things that teams have done or have been accused of doing, whispers of different tactics violations. I've seen confidences betrayed on draft day any number of times, going mm-hmm. back to the 1980s when one particular coach, who thought he had a friend in a former co-worker of a coaching staff, they both went on to become head coaches in different places, and their picks happened to fall in succession in the draft, and the one coach made what he thought was a mistake by revealing to the other coach who he was going to be picking, and that coach picked that particular wide receiver, leaving the other coach upset that he that his trust had been violated.
Yeah.
So he was picked to pick another guy, and at the end of the day, the player that was picked after the coveted receiver or the more coveted receiver ended up being the better player. So I don't know. Sometimes those stories work out that way too.
Yeah, that's kind of seems the way that this kind of is working out, because if this is the case, Patriots certainly have held the upper hand, certainly in terms of wins and losses and performance this year, I would
right.
say.
Right, absolutely.
All right. Well, Vic, this certainly plays into what I was kind of talking about here to open up our program today in terms of the fact that the Patriots and the Jets now are kind of moving into a realm that we just don't see a lot of and maybe not even enough of in the NFL, and that is one of a pure rivalry when you actually include emotion and maybe even a little dislike or hatred into the mix.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes for a great rivalry. I think you have to have animosity. And even if it comes from something other than the way this one may have been enhanced, or was enhanced, I should say, not may have been, was enhanced mm-hmm. by the whole Spygate thing, I think that it's healthy for teams to go into games really not liking each other and showing it on the field. How far do you want to carry that? Well, I'd like it to stay within the competitive lines of the game, so to speak, but I also think that, you know, maybe we don't see as much or enough of that in today's league as we once did, and I think that's what makes us fans, all of us, and love the game, is the thought that everybody's playing for something other than the fact that they have to, because that's how they get paid.
Right. So now we're going to add a little something else to this mix for Sunday. The fact that we might have a blizzard in New England. How about that one?
Yeah, you know, tracking that those weather reports of the nor'easter that's been talked about, and wow, you know, I was there. I was at Foxborough, of course, for the Snow Bowl game against the Raiders. We know other reasons why it was the most unforgettable, but the weather itself was something that made it, in my memory, something that I'll never forget. And now that wasn't. It was a pretty bad storm, and it wasn't a fun thing to deal with outside of watching the game and watching players make snow angels in the field. But this, if this forecast comes through to the worst extent, I don't know what you got there, and I just shudder to think about a game being played under those circumstances. But hey, it is football, and they do play in the snow.
They certainly do, and here's, I guess, the whole point, because the Patriots, in terms of their fans in particular, have been just, you know, swimming around, and the analogy that I made was they're like sharks in a tank. They're waiting for the first sign of blood, and then they're going to just drop, and they're going to get after it, and the venom is going to come out, and this is where people think it was going to be a 60-something to nothing type of game. But weather has always been a great equalizer, especially when two teams are not even on the field, as apparently these two teams are not. So if there was ever a chance for the Jets not only to play it close, but maybe even win this game, this plays into their favor.
I think you're right about that, John, and it does make it interesting. It could make what we thought would be, the no hope game, the it's over before they even start playing it type of game, turn into something more interesting because of weather equalizing it. Although, having said all that, and having watched this New England team perform and do the amazing game in and game out, I know they haven't had to do it under real brutal weather conditions so far. I don't know why. There's part of me that still says, as good as they are, whatever is bad for both teams, they'll still have that, you know, they'll still have that edge because of what they have in talent. So if I'm a lot faster than you and a better receiver than you, and you can't cover me when the ground is dry, you still might not be able to cover me if we're both sloshing through snow.
Well, that's possible, and I guess we're only going to learn once we get the players out on the field and we kind of do this. I just seem to think, though, that this could end up being an equalizing factor. And, of course, if you look at the Patriots from a strictly X and O situation, the one thing that Patriots, that fans at least, and maybe some media, still seem to have a doubt about is the Patriots' running game and whether or not they have the ability to run the ball when they really need to run the ball. They haven't needed to yet. They might need to on Sunday.
Yeah, they might. And I think they can when they need to. But that's the unique part of this offense is you don't think of it in terms of an offense that even needs to run because of how spectacular, how quickly, how effectively they can score and move the ball through the air. But I look at the talent. I look at how well Lawrence Maroney can run when he runs. I look at, you know, the tough yards Kevin Falk can pick up. You know, I look at the different things that they're able to do in moments, in those sort of like situational places that we've seen through the year. And I say to myself, you know, this team could run the ball effectively. Well, and why don't they? Because, well, duh, they don't have to. And I also think that it's something to be said about your philosophy, how you set up what you do best. This team throws the ball well, and therefore everything else it does, including run the ball, is set up by the ability to throw. So it's a complementary part.
It's definitely that, and we're going to find out how well all the parts will work when we have equalizing factors like weather on the field. Vic Carucci from NFL.com joining us here inside the playbook. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you a little current event stuff going on within the NFL and what your thoughts are on Bobby Petrino's sudden resignation in Atlanta.
John, that was stunning. I really did not foresee Bobby Petrino going that route, the route he went. I thought In fact, Arthur Blank, the owner of the team, is probably even the most surprised, and that should say it all, because I think he was feeling a sense of okay, healing after the whole Michael Vick thing, and that this team was going to move on and rebuild, restart with, and he described Petrino as his CEO of the football team. And I really think he was trusting Petrino to kind of guide the way, and at the same time was not aware that, you know, that Petrino's eyes were on something, in his mind, a bigger prize at the collegiate level, maybe a better opportunity. Not, I guess it was a better opportunity than the one he previously had at college at Louisville. And I also question how much Petrino felt comfortable with the whole college game. That he won't be the first college coach, Lou Holtz and others, who have found it very difficult to make that transition to the NFL from all the success they had at the collegiate ranks. And so I think those factors played into it, and the opportunity was, in his mind, just too great to ignore. But walking out with three weeks left in the season, and you hear the players on the Falcon team very upset about this, I'm sure, again, Arthur Blank is not a happy guy. And quite frankly, I'm hoping for Bobby Petrino's sake that, you know, he's pretty well put the rest ever coming back to the NFL, because
that won't happen.
Seemingly do it, yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, just knowing what I know, because of his time at Louisville as well, I hope the Arkansas Razorbacks know what they're getting into by hiring a guy like Petrino. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Sometimes
you don't need words. Your actions speak.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, are you as surprised as anybody else over the way that the Patriots really exploited the Steelers' secondary and their safeties in particular last week?
Well, I knew without Troy Polamalu, I thought that was such a disadvantage for Pittsburgh, and I also thought that, you know, their ability to really try and keep in check what Tom Brady was doing from a play-action standpoint would be compromised, because the one thing I did know about those younger guys or the replacement players was that they were more aggressive and overzealous, and that's a bad thing to be against this New England passing game. And I've seen Tom Brady take even better the better safeties in this league to town with his play action, and I just thought that would be kind of the case this way around, where I thought the game might be equal, or the equalizer, if you talk about equalizers again, is the Steelers' ability to run the football effectively, and they did. And that's the stat that I think really hits you between the eyes, is Willie Parker ran about as well as you could want a running back to run and pile up those yards. And on normal circumstances against normal teams, that number would seemingly mean for a close game and give them a chance to win it. It made no difference when you're as explosive as the Patriots are, just as the fact that the Patriots didn't run the ball that
right.
well in that game, or I shouldn't say, just ignore the running game and how well that still worked out for them.
Yeah, on both sides of the ball, I think that's some cause for concern for Patriots fans, as we're nitpicky around here, and not only their inability, apparently, to run the ball on offense, but to stop the run on defense. Now, it's hard to argue with 13-0, but when you look at the numbers between the lines there, well, you can see that there is an opportunity for someone to do some exploiting.
Well, yeah, yes, you're right. I mean, at face value, John, but I also think you got to look at how the games unfold, too.
Right.
I think it matters that you don't just look at it in terms of numbers. And I think we're at a different time in this game right now where, you know, consistently effective running games aren't necessarily delivering everything you need them to and your best results as a team. Seattle Seahawks are a classic example of a team that's run away with their division and have been on just such a hot streak because doing so, throwing the football with Matt Hasselbeck and really getting very little production from their running game. The Packers, staked out much of their first half success this season, minus a running game. They found one with Ryan Grant, but I think the way this game is devised, the way the rules of the game give you so much leeway in the passing game to take advantage, where defensive backs just have to be hands off as much as possible. If you're throwing it, you're winning. And there's a you can break it down a thousand different ways. The Patriots are 13-0 because they throw it better than everybody else. And the Dallas Cowboys are where they are because they throw it better than most of their teams. And the Packers because of Brett Favre. You know, just go down that list. Indianapolis Colts, pick your top four teams and show me, rank the reasons why those teams are where they are. Throwing the ball is number one with a star on it.
Quarterbacks and receivers. That's exactly right. One more for you in terms of the Miami Dolphins, next week's opponent. While the Patriots may very well end up going 16-0, if the Dolphins go 0-16, that obviously has never happened before. I mean, how much of a surprise would that really be, number one? And number two, we learned today, I guess, that Cleo Lemon is coming back in as quarterback.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that situation because I think it's you know, the losing is one thing, and that 0-16 would seem to be a very, you know, tough number for that coaching staff to overcome for, but he is in his first year, Cam Cameron, as a head coach, and maybe he gets, just because it was his first year, and again, not unlike what I thought the Petrino situation would be like, you get a chance, especially with their respective quarterback issues. You know, the Dolphins did start the year out thinking Trent Green would be able to get them through at least this year, and that never happened. That failed to happen. And, you know, John Beck as a rookie, pushing him in as they have, it went from bad to worse with him with five turnovers one week, and then he couldn't even make it out of the first quarter against Buffalo. So I see, you know, a team that is again, worse than the quarterback situation, also pulling apart in other ways. You know, you have veteran players sort of openly questioning the head coach, and that's never healthy. So when you add it all up, it makes for a very challenging decision process for the ownership there to say, do we pick the right guy, and can we stay the course with this guy? They can't stay the course because they're going to, you know, they got to find a quarterback. They got to find a lot of things, and they have so much to find. You know, you just wonder how much better you can get even next year.
Yeah, you'd have to wonder, does Cam Cameron keep his job?
My gut instinct, John, is that he will for the reasons that I said, as far as him being his first year guy and not having a quarterback, and also having some key defensive injuries. You can make the case, and also it's what, coach number two in 3 years,
right?
So that's hitting the reset button a lot, and if you keep doing that, you know, that lack of continuity, we all know that usually doesn't bring good results.
Great. Vic, thanks a lot for the time again today. What's your assignment this weekend? Will we see you here?
I'm going to be in Cleveland for that key big AFC playoff type showdown between the Bills and Cleveland Browns.
That's right. Didn't think that you would probably be seeing that at the beginning of the year, did you?
I did not. I did not. And you know, it would be interesting. Maybe getting a little further west might help out as far as the weather this week. stay a little on the inside edge of that storm.
Will you make sure you keep an eye out for the flares going in the sky from the east?
We'll come and send some rescue, you know, parties.
Thank you.
For you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Vic.
Have fun, John. All right.
All right, you too. Thanks. Appreciate the time. That's Vic Carucci again, is the senior editor for NFL.com, visiting with us here inside Patriots Playbook, giving you his very latest take on all things around the National Football League, including the New England Patriots. Always great to check in with Vic, as we do on this program from time to time during the course of the season. Ah, man. He's weaseling out on us. He's going to Cleveland for Cleveland and Buffalo. Goodness gracious. Interesting points, though, not only on the whole Patriots-Jets scenario, but on some of the other things that we are going through in terms of the Steelers game and the running game or lack thereof, or the inability to stop the Steelers running game last week. Some good stuff, some absolutely good stuff. And coming up a little bit later on in the program, we will let you hear the conference call that members of the Patriots meet ahead with Eric Mangini earlier today from Gillette Stadium. We'll also have Bill Belichick's news conference. We'll have Tom Brady's call as well, his news conference. And we've got players' interviews from the locker room, Patriots locker room, for you inside the playbook today. Wes Welker, Ty Warren, Rodney Harrison, Benjamin Watson, Mike Vrabel, Asante Samuel, amongst the players that you will hear from. So we got a ton of stuff to get to. We've also got your emails to get to. Webradio@patriots.com. You know that address. Webradio@patriots.com. Your thoughts on the Jets in particular now. The Jets, maybe, maybe pulling off a little Spygate of their own. And whether or not you think, A, that will have any bearing at all on what the Patriots do from here on out, B, should the NFL get involved in some form or fashion, or C, do we just let this whole thing blow over and worry about what happens, you know, between the yard lines on Sunday? That is, of course, if we can find the yard lines. Time to go call the I think the ACI and see if we can't get some inmate to sweep the field on Sunday again, huh? Just like for John Smith back in the 80s. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back, get to your emails, and we've got much more to get to right here inside the playbook.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots extra points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots extra points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots extra points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at Patriots ExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we got to go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats! Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Oh, yeah. It's going to snow, all right. Weather scenario, again, does not look good. It looks rather bleak for Sunday in the matchup with the Jets. So we welcome you back inside Patriots Playbook. I'm John Rook, and yeah, it could be anywhere from 6 inches and maybe a bunch of slush later on to a foot or more, maybe even upwards of 2 feet, depending on the track of a storm that's going to crawl up the coast and meet with the cold air smack dab head on. Right about kickoff time, or perhaps actually late Sunday morning. So, you know, if you're coming to the game, if you're in the area and you're coming to the game, make sure you bring lots of clothing. Layers always work. Make sure you get there plenty early. I don't know. We may even have to. You might want to stay tuned and certainly stay abreast of things via the Patriots website as well, because my guess is that if there's a possibility for some real weather problems, may open up the parking lots a little bit earlier to get people in. So just stay tuned anyway, and we'll pass that information on to you as it becomes available to us. In the meantime, I just wanted to take a minute here before we get out to some emails to update the playoff scenarios around the NFL, because I guess there were a couple of discrepancies that had gotten published on ESPN.com and some other places. So who do we go to but no less an expert than our own Russell Baxter, who visits with us each and every Thursdays, here on the program, the NFL research coordinator for ESPN. And he sent me this note today. He's talking about updating the NFL playoff scenarios. In the AFC, obviously we know the Patriots have clinched, and they've got they will clinch home field advantage throughout the playoffs with a win on Sunday. That's all they need to do. Beat the Jets, and there's no way possible that they cannot have the number one seed in the AFC, which, of course, is the ultimate goal you should have during the regular season. Division title's nice. Yeah, that's great. And obviously, if you're the number one seed, then it goes without saying you're going to be a division champion. But that's the one thing you do want to have if you really have something you want to play for, because you're guaranteed two games at home that way if, of course, you get to that second game. You're going to get the AFC Championship at home. So Patriots need to win to get that. They could get it also with an Indianapolis loss or if both teams tie, just for, you know, hey, accuracy sake here. The Colts clinched the AFC South Division with a win or a Jacksonville loss. Pittsburgh clinches the North Division with a win and a Cleveland loss. Pittsburgh will clinch a playoff berth with a win. They won't yet have the division title if Cleveland also beats Buffalo. San Diego gets the AFC West Division if they win and Denver loses this weekend or ties. Or a San Diego tie and a Denver loss. But if San Diego wins, Denver also has to lose for the Chargers to clinch the West Division this weekend. Jacksonville will clinch a playoff berth with a win and a Tennessee loss or tie. Cleveland will clinch a playoff berth as soon as this weekend if they win, if they beat Buffalo, and Tennessee and Denver both lose. Plausible. Maybe not entirely, but believable, but plausible. All right, in the NFC, here's how we are going into Week 15. The Cowboys have clinched home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs, or they will, with a win and a Green Bay loss. Still have to have Green Bay lose one more. Cowboys have to win one more. If they do that, then they'll have the number one seed in the NFC, and I don't think anybody really expects anything else otherwise to happen. Green Bay will clinch a first-round bye, so in other words, no worse than the two seed in the NFC with a win and a Seattle loss or tie. Tampa Bay will clinch the South Division Championship with a win or with a New Orleans loss. The Giants will clinch a playoff berth, and this is important now because obviously we've taken a bunch of emails here, and I have in this show, and I'm sure the PFW guys as well, talking about the scenarios for Week 17 in a couple of weeks. When if both teams have nothing to play for, and does that increase the Patriots' chances of finishing the perfect regular season? Well, if the Giants are to clinch a playoff berth this weekend, they need a win or a tie. And if they win or tie this weekend, they are in the playoffs, which basically will render the last 2 weeks moot because they can't be one of the top four seeds. They can't win the division. So the best that the Giants could do would be the 5 seed, which means they're going to open up on the road somewhere, no matter what happens in the last 2 weeks. They could also clinch a playoff berth if Minnesota loses or ties and New Orleans loses or ties. But with the Giants win, they're in. Okay, so there you go. All they got to do is win. And if they do, then that renders everything moot. And your guess is as good as mine, but my guess would be that they would probably choose to rest guys. You know, maybe they rest them in week 16 and then play them in 17. I don't know, but, you know, they're going to have to play a wild card game, so they're not going to get an off week. And certainly the postseason is what it's all about. So, anyway, I just wanted to make sure that we brought that to the fore to give you the updated playoff look and what can actually happen with games this weekend. Todd sends an email and says, New England 38, Jets 3, and that's in a nor'easter. So he's already predicting on Sunday's game, and we'll, you know, take your thoughts on that as well if you like. And, you know, we'll also do that on Thursdays as we normally do here on the program. But he says 38-3 in a nor'easter. Well, okay. Scott in New Hampshire says, what determines the salary of a draft pick? Is it spelled out on the CBA, or is it just negotiated between the team and the player's agent? If it's the latter, then could a team pay the rookie play a more sane contract? I believe that it's slotted, if I'm not mistaken, Scott. And I'm not the expert to be asking about this. PFW guys may know this a little bit more about it than I do, because they stay up on it a little bit more. I'm a little bit more into the individual matchups and the games themselves. But I would tell you, based on my knowledge, and I'm just being honest with you here, and I'm not going to lie to you if I don't know it. I could certainly BS you, but I'm just, you know, I'm not going to do that. My guess is that it's slotted, and you do have a salary cap, and so knowing what you have available to your roster with guys coming back, that pretty much takes care of what you can afford to pay a rookie. So if you're far off of it, then could you pay a rookie a little bit more? Yeah. But if you're close to the cap, would you have to cut back? Probably, unless you're going to cut personnel. So it's just a question of pinching pennies. You know, and adding and subtracting. All right, let's see. What else we got here? Here's someone. Quajo sends this one. And he says he's having a problem, apparently, with Stephen Gostkowski. He says he's talking about missing the field goal that could have given us a seven-point lead in the first half against Pittsburgh. At that point in the game, it was crucial considering what our defense was doing. I'm getting very uncomfortable with him. Is there any kicker on the waiver wire that we could look at? Oh, good Lord. I'm not going to go any further. First of all, if there was a kicker, if the kicker being on a waiver wire at this stage of the game and not on a roster, what does that tell you? So you really think that a quote-unquote street free agent is going to be better than what you have in Steve Gostkowski? Please. Some people, you know, some people need to think about what they're writing before they send an email. That's, it can't be one of your worries. It really can't be. I mean, he's got a heavy enough leg. Some of the reasons for perhaps his kickoffs not all getting into the end zone are that Patriots are actually trying to play field position, and he's got a heavy enough leg so he can usually get it in there when he needs to. Some of them are design plays. That's all I'll tell you. Okay, this one comes from the Big Al, who says he's listening to the webcast archive from yesterday over here in the Middle East. Thanks, Al. Appreciate it. He says, nitpicking from Nitpick Tuesday. I could not agree with you more about the one lingering issue this team will need to confront, and that's being the run defense, particularly on first and 10. When the bad weather really hits during the postseason, we may be challenged by runners like Joseph Addai, LaDainian Tomlinson, Fred Taylor, even Jamal Lewis of the Browns. Well, let's start with Thomas Jones of the Jets this weekend, Al. Might happen. I have been assuming that Richard Seymour still gets double-teamed even when recovering from an injury, and perhaps that's why we don't seem to hear his name called as much. However, as long as he is demanding a double-team, then to me that's good. That will presumably free up other people. That's a very good point, and it's probably part of the reason that you're seeing a guy like Vince Wilfork making tackles now. Because he's in position to do that, because there's attention being paid elsewhere on the line of scrimmage. Al says, this could be one of those years when we really need that bye. Coming off the bye week during the regular season, we really shut down the Bills in Buffalo, although admittedly they did not have the services of Marshawn Lynch that night. So I'm still optimistic about the postseason and a 19-0 finish. The toughest game will be the AFC Championship game, which will probably be against the second-best team in football, but we'll have it at home. He says, OTIS, the Big Al. Thanks, Al. Appreciate that. Stay safe over in the Middle East. All good points by you, I might add. All good points. All right, James, our friend in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, sends this one today. Did a little bit of a comparison work, and it actually looks pretty good, so I'll share some of it with you. He says, a lot has been made of the supposed soft schedule the Patriots have this year, how it might contribute to them possibly going undefeated this season, and whether they should be called the best team ever. So to get a better idea on how good this year's Patriots might be, I thought I'd compare the teams the Patriots have played so far this season to the teams that the 72 Dolphins and the 85 Bears played during their respective great seasons. Okay, fair enough. For the 72 Dolphins, who finished 14-0, he says they played two teams that ended up with winning records, no eventual playoff teams. Had three close games, a one-point win over a 4-9-1 Buffalo team, a two-point win over 7-7 Minnesota, and a four-point win over a 7-7 Jets team. The combined record of their opponents was a .369 winning percentage. That's not very good at all. Keep in mind that was a Dolphins team that blew the Patriots out 52-0 that year as well, right? Okay, for the 85 Bears, who finished 15-1, they played six teams that had winning records. Two eventual division champs, three eventual wild cards. They lost by 14 points to a 12-4 Miami team. They had two close games, 6-point win over 8-8 Green Bay, 7-point win over 5-11 Indy. The combined winning percentage of their opponents, 473. So you'd have to say the 85 Bears certainly rack up there nicely with the 72 Dolphins, even though they didn't win every game. They didn't finish 15-1, but they had a tougher schedule than the Dolphins did in 72. All right, now the 07 Patriots, currently 13-0. They've already played seven teams that have winning records and will play at least one more at the season's end of the Giants. They will have played and beaten four division champs and at least one wild card team by season's end. They've had three close games this year, we know. And let's see. The combined record of their opponents, currently, 503. Okay. Now, that percentage is going to come down with the next couple of weeks with the Jets and the Dolphins, and then crawl back up incrementally when they face the Giants in the last week. So what does that tell you? Tells me, at least James says, that should the Patriots go undefeated this season and add that to multiple records they're on pace to break while doing so, then I say you'll have a very hard time not calling them the best team ever. Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. We've sort of danced around that over the last few weeks as we've gotten closer to the end of the season, but this definitely underscores that. And James, I'm very happy you went and did the research. Thank you for sending it. And you know, I'm gonna hold on to this email because, quite frankly, we'll use it to kind of compare things with if we ever need to do that. But the fact is, the Patriots have played a tougher schedule than either one of the 85 Bears or the 72 Dolphins, which are considered and certainly should be considered two of the best teams of all time in the NFL. And if the Patriots manage to get through unscathed, they should be on top of both the 85 Bears and the 72 Dolphins, without a doubt. It's a very good email. Good research done there, James. Takes a dedicated fan, or a knucklehead, or a nut, one or the other. Matt and Quincy. All right, I know everyone's sick of talking about it, but a local radio host that I have very little regard for maintains that the only thing the Pats did wrong is that they had a camera on the field. He said the Patriots did not cheat because it is not illegal to film another team's signals. I think he's wrong. Well, again, I'm not sure that I'm the person to be asking this. This is probably better pointed toward someone like Perillo. Based on what I know and my interpretation of what the rule says, you can't film anybody, period. That's what I think. Okay, you're not supposed to. In fact, the letter of the law came down as that, you know, no video camera, no videotaping of the sidelines, period. Based on what I read, and that's what I recall. And I don't have the letter in front of me. That's all I'm going to tell you. So, you know, we're kind of past that now, but nevertheless, that's what I think. All right, Charles in Atlanta sends this. He says, I know this game isn't going to live up to the hype. My guess is the Jets will play their hearts out and keep it close, but leading up to the game, there's not one sports writer without a demented bloodlust for what could happen. And I have to admit, some of their ideas are pretty good. Okay, here we go. He gives us two. This one comes from Bill Simmons, the sports guy. He says, okay. Well, I have to admit, I'm already looking ahead to the Steelers and Jets games. What if the Pats left Chris Hansen inactive for the Jets game and played without a punter? Wouldn't that be the ultimate slap in the face? Know this going in, Mangini. We're not punting. Can you think of a better psychological ploy? It's one thing to go 19-0. It's another thing to be the team that intentionally scratched their punter before a game for the first ever FU transaction. That's funny. I think I actually saw that. And then Mike McAllister writes this. He says, here's what Belichick should do when he meets Eric Mangini at midfield following the Pats' 58-3 win on Sunday. Hand Mangini a camcorder and say, I don't know what I was thinking, stealing your crappy team signs, but feel free to tape ours. That's good. It's good. Excellent. Thanks for sending, Charles. All right. Andy in Sioux City, Iowa. Sorry to all the poor bastards that don't get NFL Network. I think if the Jets game would have been 4 to 5 weeks after the first, it would have had a lot more emotion attached to it. It's been so long since the Spygate incident that it just doesn't seem like as big a deal and motivator. He says, in good weather, Pats 48-17. Bad weather, Pats 28-18. Andy, I think you're giving the Jets offense a lot of credit there. I don't disagree with the 28 points, but 18 by the Jets? Really? Kellen Clements, a quarterback? Ooh, okay. John in Missouri. John, the new video allegations don't mean much. It just highlights the culture of gamesmanship or spying in the NFL. If we expect everyone else, media and fans alike, to get over it, then we shouldn't make a big deal of it. All the Pats need to say about any of it is being said on the field. Okay. Spoken like someone in the locker room down the hallway, John. Good job. Dave says, I think we should do like Bill did when this broke. But this so much smells like a rat. Welcome to the Blizzard Bowl. Sorry, rats, no cheese here. Says, it smells like Mangini Gate. So much smells like a rat. Okay, fair enough, Dave. Appreciate that. As we now embark upon hour number two of Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio, I'm John Rook. Give you a chance to catch up as well if you're just logging on to the program. Webradio@Patriots.com is our email address. Got plenty of time to get in a few more emails today. Your thoughts on the Jets apparently doing to the Patriots last year, no less. After the Patriots did what they did, allegedly, in according to the Spygate incident back in the opening week of this season. And I wanted to know your thoughts, and if it's much ado about nothing, please say so. But if you think that, you know, hey, if the Jets are as guilty as the Patriots were, apparently, then should the Jets also be held accountable, like the Patriots were, apparently? Or should we just move on? Fair question, number one. Number two, you ready for the big snow? Because apparently it's coming. So your thoughts on the Jets and the Pats matchup on Sunday here at Gillette. In the meantime, let's get you off to updated in terms of how this football team was practicing out there on the field today, is preparing for the JETS, 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 Jets. And let's start it off with head coach Bill Belichick.
Run a few minutes late here this morning. Just got off the conference call in New York. And you know how those things can run a little long, so... well, we're into the Jets, and you know, this is a team that's been in a lot of tight games. Obviously, played very well a couple weeks ago against Pittsburgh when they beat them, and you know, there's a lot of new faces. Of course, you know, the quarterback is the most obvious one, but defensively, they're playing a lot of people across the board, both in the secondary and in the front seven. You know, a lot of new players, a lot of rotations, guys playing different positions. You know, like sometimes Robertson's at end, sometimes it nose, sometimes Ellis is at outside linebacker, sometimes at end, sometimes Coleman's on the left, the right, so forth and so on. So, you know, there's a number of different personnel things that they do. As we know, the Jets are a very explosive team. They can get you on one play in any phase of the game, whether it's a kickoff return by Washington or a block kick. Or a big play pass to Cotchery or Coles, or a long run by Jones, or a strip sack, or an interception by Rhodes, or, you know, one of their pressure defenses where they get a guy coming free and, you know, knock the quarterback down, knock the ball loose and all that. So they're explosive. They can turn games around in a hurry, score quickly, and they give you a lot to get ready for. So we're going to need all the time that we can get to trying to recalibrate here. I think this is, you know, quite a bit different from what we saw in September. Certainly, there's some similarities. I'm not saying that, but there's a lot of things that are new. It's been 3 months, and you know, they're doing some things differently that we'll have to prepare for this week, and that'll be a big challenge for us. So that's where we're at today on the Jets.
Bill, weather-wise, things can always change, but long-term forecast. Possibility that there could be snow. When you're putting together your plan for this game, how much do you put stock into that? How much movability do you have within the plan?
Well, I think you certainly have to be aware of it. You know, when you're playing in the Northeast and at this time of year, you have to be ready for the different elements. I think my experience has been you got to be careful about going overboard one way or the other. This far in advance on, you know, Tuesday when you do the game plan or Wednesday when you put it in, because a lot can change between now and Sunday. You know, the forecast is, you know, it's a foot of snow and it turns out to be 60 degrees and vice versa. So, you know, I think you set it up the way you would want to play the team in a kind of a normal situation. And then as the game gets closer, then you be ready to adjust to the conditions as they get a little bit more predictable and as it comes to precipitation or heavy winds or things like that, we usually don't talk to the team about that until either the day of the game or, in this case, it's a 1 o'clock game, so maybe the night before. But I've made that mistake before, you know, the night before, telling the team, well, you know, we're going to be playing in a foot of snow, and wake up the next morning and it's 50 degrees and sunny, and they look at you like, you know, what a moron you are. Why'd we go through that? So, but in the end, I mean, in the end, no matter what the conditions are, our opponent's the Jets, and that's a team we got to stop, and we got to block them, we got to tackle them, we got to defend them, we got to cover kicks against them, and that's really, no matter what the situation is weather-wise on Sunday, we got to do a good job against the New York Jets, and they're our opponent this week, and that's where our real focus is. I'm not saying the weather couldn't be a factor, but I think we've got to, you know, we got to focus on the Jets, and then, as I say, maybe as it gets closer to game time, if there's something that that might affect us, then we'll work with that.
Bill, did I assume that the New York guys were asking you about your relationship with?
Oh, they had a lot of questions. I'm sure we can get you the transcript, Ron. Take a good look at it.
Let's just clear you on that. Where do you? Is this a personal thing with you, this game, or not? Can you avoid yourself from that aspect of the?
It's the next game. It's a division game. You know, it's a team that we know well. We played three times last year. You know, twice a year. It's a division game. They know us well. We know them well. And you know, we're just going to try to do what we always do, which is win. Try to have a good week of preparation and go out there and play well on Sunday. That's our job. That's what we get paid to do, and that's what we want to do. So, you know, everything that's in the past is in the past. Everything that's in the future doesn't really matter. Right now, it's a one-game season. We're focused on the New York Jets, and that's all I'm focused on. And I'm happy to talk about that, and that's really about the extent of it.
Well, there's going to be so much attention paid to the post-game handshake. When you're in that kind of scenario...
The handshakes and the high fives and all that. Right now, my attention is on the New York Jets, okay? And that's really all I'm thinking about is how we can... how I can prepare our team the best of my ability to prepare for the game, play it on Sunday, so...
Question was, does it make you uneasy? I mean, you seem to be a guy who's comfortable when the action's on the field and don't care for that kind of spotlight.
Yeah, well, right now my focus is on getting ready for the New York Jets. So high fives, I really haven't thought too much about that. Cartwheels, you know, I don't know.
Coach, you mentioned the quarterback change. What does Clemens do differently from Pennington after you prepare for?
Well, I think they're both very good. You know, Clemens had a real good preseason, so we saw him in preseason getting ready for the opener. You know, but he's an athletic kid. I think he's got a strong arm, can make all the throws. He's scrambled out and done a good job of, you know, making some plays out of the pocket. He's also, you know, on reverses and stuff like that. You know, he's aggressive. He'll go out there and block. You know, he's a tough kid. I don't think he's got a good arm. He can get the ball down the field. He's got a good touch on it. He's strong in the pocket. You know, you got to wrap him up. They move him around some on. They're not a big bootleg team, but they run some plays where the quarterback moves in the pocket. He's certainly athletic enough to do that. You know, he's pulled the ball down on some scrambles and picked up some key first downs on third down situations. So you got to, you know, and similar to last week with Roethlisberger. You know, I'm not talking about a guy that's, you know, not Vince Young, but, you know, a guy that can pull the ball down and pick up yardage and gain first downs in critical situations. So, you know, you have to defend that as well with Clemens.
Coach, can you talk about Vince Wilfork? He seemed very active last week. He's obviously having a pretty good year. Just how he's come along.
Well, Vince is a real good player. I think he does everything well. He's, you know, he's strong. He's physical. He's a tough guy to block in a running game. And he's an explosive guy in pass rush. And he has good quickness and plays with good leverage. Vince is smart. He understands football. He understands blocking schemes, defensive concepts, where we're strong on a particular defense, where we're weak, and sometimes how him being right in the middle, how he can compensate on that one way or the other. You know, when you're strong in one place and weak on another, then the first place you can start to adjust is right in the middle of the defense, whether it be the nose or the middle linebacker or one of your safeties to try to, you know, cheat back there to balance it up, that type of thing. So. You know, Vince is very well prepared. He's one of the most instinctive and smartest defensive linemen that I've coached, and he's got a lot of skill and he works hard. You know, he's out there all the time. He's good in the off season. He's, you know, there's a long list of positives.
Bill, as you're probably aware from your New York conference call, Newsday is reporting today that a Jets employee was told to leave Gillette last year for illegally videotaping. Can you confirm that?
Right. There's a lot of things that have happened in the past or been talked about in the past, and really all the past is in the past. I don't care about any of those. Right now my focus is on the New York Jets.
Bill, there is a history with the Jets going back in the 70s. A fist fight after a game.
In the 70s. Let's talk about that. I bet everybody's interested in that. Something happened 40 years ago. Okay.
They all hate
whatever.
You feel that your team is particularly angry about playing the Jets every time you play.
It's a division game. It's a division game. The division games are very competitive. You're used to playing a team a couple times a year. We played it just 3 times last year. You know, we know each other well. It's a competitive game. So we want to do well. I'm sure they want to do well. That's the way it is.
Bill, I understand that you do want to talk about the Jets. However, you were heavily punished for what went on with your situation. Just for
the past is in the past. I'm not thinking about the past. I'm thinking about this week.
Who's your favorite former Cleveland Brown ball boy?
Why don't you come up with that one, Tom? Just at the spur of the moment, or is that one been working on it? It would probably be my son, Steven. That's probably who it would be. I couldn't put anybody ahead of him. He was young and inexperienced, but, you know, I had a soft spot for him there.
This is going to be an emotional game for both teams, but Vince Wilfork said this week that one of the differences with the defensive line's play was how emotional they were for 60 minutes. Did you notice that?
I thought we played better defensively last week than we had in some other weeks. But, you know, again, last week's last week, so it doesn't make any difference. I don't think there's any carryover. I think the carryover will start on Sunday afternoon at, you know, when the game starts, and then we'll see how we play and how we play versus them at that point in time. So that's, again, to me this week, it's a one-game season like they all are. You start on Wednesday, you get ready for Sunday, and Sunday you go out there and put your best effort out there on the field, and, you know, we'll see how good or not good that is.
Coach, you saw the Jets game against Pittsburgh on tape when you compare them to Pittsburgh, and you've seen it again this week. That stands out as so different from all the other Jets games. What have you seen on tape that was?
Well, it came right down to the end. How many overtimes of games have they been in this year? It's like every other game they've been in. It's just practically every game they've been in has come down to the last possession. Including like last week. Last week's game came into the last against Cleveland. That came right down to the last possession, too. That's the way most all their games have been, other than the Dallas game. So, that's the way it's been with them. And they make a lot of plays, you know, just like last week. You think that Cleveland, you know, is in good shape after Lewis scores, and then the Jets score, and then they're onside kicking again. They already got one onside kick. So, you know, that's the way they are. We've seen that before, too. You know, we had a big lead on them down there in the second game last year. Was it 24-0 or whatever? Then they block a field goal, and they're throwing for the end zone at the end of the game. So, they, one or two plays, they can turn around in a hurry, and it could be in any phase of the game. It could be in the kicking game, offensively or defensively. They're a well-balanced team, and they got a lot of firepower. Okay, thank you.
Head coach Bill Belichick with members of the Patriots media earlier today at Gillette Stadium. How funny was Tom Curran from NBCSports.com? How funny was the question, who's your favorite Cleveland Browns ball boy? That's awesome. He even got a smile out of Coach Belichick. Unbelievable. That was perfect. It probably did. And knowing Tom, I'm sure he did think about that question for a while. Oh, that was great. Perfect. Oh, man. All right, here we go. Email webradio@patriots.com. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to get to Eric Mangini's conference call with members of the Patriots media. So we'll hopefully have a contrast in styles for you to observe today. And a little bit later on in this hour, we'll get inside the Patriots locker room. Interviewed today, Wes Welker, Ty Warren, Rodney Harrison, Benjamin Watson, Mike Vrabel, and Asante Samuel. So all of their thoughts on the upcoming anticipated Blizzard Bowl against the Jets this Sunday here at Gillette. All right, Steve in Ames, Iowa, sends this note. Says, I'm wondering, if Brady gets hurt and is done for the season, would the Patriots be able to go get a Bledsoe or a plumber to lead them the rest of the way? Woo. Woo.
Really? I think a plumber would be better than Bledsoe.
Yeah.
Or an electrician.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, an electrician, really. This late stage in the season, okay? I mean, honestly, knock on wood here, okay? Or on Formica or whatever it might be. If something like that were to happen, I don't see the Patriots going out and getting anybody. My guess is that Matt Cassel takes the ball and goes with it, whether you believe in him or not, because it's just so late in the year. The only other person that I could see them going to get, honestly, is somebody who's already signed, and that's Vinny Testaverde, because Vinny has the background here, he's not available. So in that regard, I don't see him getting anybody, period. He says, I was also curious who sent the memo to everybody not to use video recorders on the field this year. Was the competition committee? I think that some of the people on that committee are really there to help their own team and not promote fair competition. Competition committee. No, I think that was an edict. Well, yeah, I guess it was. It came from Commissioner Goodell, but maybe it was on behalf of the competition committee. That's possible. Again, I'm not entirely 110% certain, but it came from the league, which means that you know it wasn't a committee that sent the letter. It was Roger Goodell's signature on the letter. If that makes any difference to you. David says, hi, my hatred with the Jets coincides with the Yankee hatred. I thought, we haven't had a lot of that this week. But, yeah, I mentioned that earlier because what is the computer doing here? Oh, okay. It's playing commercials on me. Don't you just love how these pop-ups come up and start playing commercials? That was one of the things that I mentioned earlier in the program. That, in all honesty, we do have the whole New York versus New England thing going this week, but that is, really, that's not even on the front burner. It's not even on the back burner. It's not on the stove at all here. So I guess it really makes sense that a lot of that hatred that Patriots fans would have for the Jets would just be because you have a New York hatred, because you're a New Englander or a New England fan. He says, and so now we can walk the walk and let's also talk the talk. I think it goes back to Curtis Martin. That hurt us really bad. Obviously, we made out with Parcells leaving, but Martin, Babe Ruth, I think it's great for the NFL. It's a little bit of a stretch there, don't you think? I think it's great for the NFL, kind of like the Canadians, 76ers, damn Yankees, rats. Dave says, P.S., Red Sox 2004 World Series and the last Patriots Super Bowl. Now we have it again. Yeah, that's right. But the one difference, of course, Dave, as you point out here, is that the last Patriots Super Bowl and the Red Sox World Series were in different seasons. Even though they came in the same calendar year. These would be the same seasons as well as the same calendar year. A little bit of a difference. A little bit of a difference. Because the Patriots won a Super Bowl technically after the 03 season, right? Even though it was in 2004. Is that right? Did I get that right? Did I get that wrong? I'm losing track. Also losing my mind. Let's see. Larry sends. He says, John, this season, of course, has been a dream so far. Looking ahead, however, it feels like we are thin in the secondary. According to Mike Reese, Eugene Wilson played 23 of 68 snaps. I didn't take much notice of him. How did he play? Can he substantially help and maybe even be a strong cover guy, or is he just playing out his string here? That's a good question. We are a little thin, but we're not. It's not near as bad, Larry, as it has been in recent years. And even you must admit that, because four or five years, we've been decimated in the secondary by injuries, and we haven't had that type of a problem this season. Again, knock on wood. Thin, maybe, but not compared to the way they were the last few years when they're pulling off street free agents like Artrell Hawkins, halfway through the season. So in that regard, I don't think we're as bad off as some might believe. I think it's just because it's sort of kind of like a familiar occurrence around here. Eugene Wilson certainly can help, but I think Eugene Wilson, because of his inability to stay healthy, I think he's kind of fallen out of favor a little bit. I honestly didn't notice him either. And that's an honest assessment. Didn't notice him. So if he was on the field for 23 out of 68 snaps, didn't really notice it. I don't know if he's playing out of string or not, but obviously if there are any injury problems between now and the end of the season, that, yeah, you'll see Eugene Wilson out there probably for more than that. Okay, James has decided to get stat happy on us today. James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. In the previous hour of the show today, he sent us this nice comparison between the 72 Dolphins, the 85 Bears, and the 07 Patriots in terms of strength of schedule and all that kind of stuff, which was good. Now James says, John, there have been some questions as to how this year's lack of offensive rushing and the increasing amount of rushing yards the defense has been giving up bodes for the Patriots' chances going into the playoffs. Well, to help answer this, I am including a comparison of this year's rushing stats to the 3 years the Patriots went on to win the Super Bowl.
It was my understanding that there would be no math.
Leave it to James, though, to come up with the math. And James, you know what? Honest to goodness, I appreciate you more than you possibly could know. It seems like I might be poking fun. I'm not having fun at your expense. I'm having fun because, quite frankly, there are people like you out there who really give a rat's you-know-what. So thank you for the email. It's good stuff to talk about. No question. Here we go. Offensive rushing. The 2001 Super Bowl champ Patriots, all right? Here we go. Averaged 23.2 points per game. They averaged 112.1 yards rushing per game. This is an unbelievable table. Gary, did you see this email? This is fascinating.
It was my understanding that there would be no math.
Exactly. And I like the man, I, you know, put it together here. It is very nice. Okay, 112 yards per game rushing. The 2003 Patriots averaged 21.8 points per game and 100.4 yards on the ground. In 04, 27.3 points per game, 133.4 yards on the ground. And then this year, 38.7 scoring, as we know, it's considerably higher, 113.7. So compared to the other three teams that won Super Bowls, this would rank number two out of four. Behind the 04 Patriots, but ahead of the 01 and the 03 Patriots in terms of rushing yards per game. Okay, fair enough. Good assessment means that they're not, you know, as poor as they even have been with previous Super Bowl champion teams. Okay. Now, as far as the defensive rushing yards allowed by the Patriots defense in the previous Super Bowl seasons, in 01, they gave up 115.9 yards per game on the ground. 115.9, and also 17 points per game. In 03, they gave up a very stingy 89.6 yards per game on the ground and only 14.9 points. That was the better Patriots defense without question. In 04, 98.2 on the ground, 16.2 points per game. All right, comparable at least. This year, so far, 99.6 per game on the ground, 17.1 points. So they're technically, of the four teams, a fraction behind two of the other three Super Bowl teams in points per game. 99.6 is the second worst per game rushing average they were allowing defensively. Now that average could come down depending upon what happens this week and next week with the Dolphins. And then, of course, we never know really what the Giants will bring to the table in the last week based on what they really have to play for. But, you know, comparable numbers. James, that's a great job by you. He says, if you ask me, I think that once they need to both run the ball and stop the run, then you will see them do it. You're right. Once they need to do it, they'll probably do it. Okay. James gets the gold star for the day in class. No doubt about it. Diane in Bridgeport, Connecticut says, John, what do you think of the idea that Matt Cassel and Matt Gutierrez should quarterback the entire Miami game to give Miami a chance to win to save them from historical disgrace? What, are you nuts? She says, given the march to 16-0, would this be seen as a moral and more competitive equalizer that would be accepted or not? What, are you nuts? Diane, I love you. This is great. Oh, good stuff. I think she had to say this with tongue in cheek, right? No, that's not going to happen. First of all, the Patriots' pride wouldn't let them do it, even if somebody actually considered it. And, you know, Tom Brady wants to play. Okay, he wants to play. Randy Moss, they want to play. These guys want to play. And they realize they're on the precipice of an historical year, a chance to go into the record books and be forever remembered as a 16-0/19-0 season. In other words, they're so close to it, they can taste it. So they're going to go for it now. They're going to say, oh, we're focused on one game at a time, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. They're going to say that. But you know they're thinking, damn, we have a chance to do this. We really have a chance to do this now. I don't know that they would have said that 3 or 4 weeks ago, but now, so close they can taste it. I mean, you know, these guys, they're all historians of the game. They know. Why the heck would Randy Moss take arguably a pay cut to come here? Because he wants to win. He wants to be remembered. He wants to be immortal. That's what all these guys want to be. And if they do this, they're immortal. This conversation will continue to take place for the next 20 to 30 years and maybe more. How long have we been mentioning the 72 Dolphins? 35 years. By the way, you might have noticed that the Dolphins this weekend are actually going to honor the 72 team. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're going to do it. Got to have something to root for, I guess. Of course, no truth to the rumor that they're going to sign 20 guys to play the second half. Probably do just as good a job, I would think. Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Very interesting. Let's see. John sends this. Says, I'm sorry, I had to send this. Okay, I guess it's a joke here. Hope it's good, because I'm just reading this for the first time. He says, God decides to have a talk with the three greatest NFL quarterbacks currently playing the game. Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, Tom Brady. God asks Peyton Manning first, what do you believe? Peyton thinks long and hard, looks God in the eye, and says, I believe in hard work and in staying true to family and friends. I believe in giving. I was lucky, but I always try to do right by my fans. God can't help but see the essential goodness of Manning and offers him a seat to his left. Then God turns to Brett Favre and says, what do you believe? Brett says, I believe passion, discipline, courage, and honor are the fundamentals of life. I, too, have been lucky, but win or lose, I've always tried to be a true sportsman, both on and off the playing fields. God is greatly moved by Brett's sincere eloquence. He offers him a seat to his right. Finally, God turns to Tom Brady, and you, Tom, what do you believe? Tom replies, I believe you're in my seat. That's actually pretty good. I like it. What was that? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Oh, thank you. Okay. All right. Now, as promised, you heard from Bill Belichick earlier this hour. Now we're going to give you a chance to hear what the members of the Patriots media had to ask New York Jets head coach Eric Mangini.
Hi, this is Eric.
Eric, how are you? This is Ron Hobson.
Hey, Ron. How you doing?
I'm doing just peachy. Just couldn't be better.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. You know, I try to get something out of Bill about the long rivalry of the Patriots and Jets. That was never the hot rivalry, except among the players. I'm talking about the 70s, 80s, 90s. The players hated each other. Well, now we have a coaching controversy, but nevertheless. When you were here, did you have the same feeling about playing the Jets, that's a team you really wanted to beat both times and wanted to beat them good?
I've had the unique experience of being with the Jets and going to the Patriots and then being with the Patriots and going to the Jets. And it's a passionate rivalry, and you enjoy the games. There's a lot of intensity on both sides, and that's what you expect going into it.
Yeah, and now, you know, everybody wants to make something of the relationship of you and Bill, so that adds more spice to it. But the fact is, your team has been on the cusp of a lot of games and overtimes and whatever, and you know, looking for an upset, looking to do something meaningful. Is that the way your guys look at it?
Well, I spoke to Marty Schottenheimer when he was down watching a game and visiting his son, and just asked him how he got to the amount of wins that he got to, and he told me a story about when he was playing, and he tried to tackle. He got in, wasn't playing very much, but he did get in. He was friends with Joe Namath at the time. They were playing the Jets, and he got in on third down, came in on a blitz and thought he was going to clean up Joe Namath. Joe Namath made a miss, got the first down, and he talked about how that play affected him the rest of the drive, and he felt like he was single-handedly responsible for giving up the touchdown that drive. He said what he learned about that is the need to move on to the next play, to be able to focus on the next play, and that as a head coach, he always knew the games were going to come down to a handful of plays, and the player's ability to focus on the next play and move on to that was what was important and what he thought was a big reason for their success. We've had a lot of games that have come down to those handful of plays, and we haven't executed as well as we needed to in those areas, and games that were close swung to our opponent as opposed to us, and that's what we're continually focusing on is being able to improve in that area and make sure that when we have the opportunity in the close games in the future that we're able to take advantage of them.
Eric, it's so difficult to maintain consistency in football. The Patriots certainly have done it with their record, and that's, you know, they should be commended for it. Last year you were a playoff team. What are some of the factors that changed You know, the assumption was you were just going to move on from there and be right back in it again. But what are some of the factors that changed that as the season went along?
You know, I actually talked about this right after the playoff game in my press conference, how each year is so unique and each year is so different. And you don't get to start at 10-6. You don't get to start at whatever you finished the previous year. You have to do all those positive things that you did the year before and continue to grow and improve upon those things and learn from the mistakes. And you see it year in and year out, where several teams that were in the playoffs last year won't be, and teams that went deep in the playoffs won't be, and other teams that had down years will be. And that's the unique thing about this league, and that's why you have to approach every situation every year as its own entity.
Coach, Rodney Harrison has made a few pretty big plays the last couple of weeks up here, both against Baltimore and then the following week against Pittsburgh. Have you seen the Patriots using him in a different manner than they had maybe earlier in the year?
Rodney Harrison is a special player and, just a special person. He was fun to coach from the perspective of he would do anything he could possibly do to help the team win, regardless of what was asked of him, and he loved the challenge of covering the best tight end. He loved the challenge of the tight games, and he's one of those guys that always wants the ball at the end of the game. He wants to be able to make the play that impacts the game, and then you combine that with the type of human being that he is, and I just can't say enough about him as a player and as a person.
Do you still keep in touch with or have any contact with guys like him? Do you still stay on good terms with guys like Rodney that you coached that are still here?
I'll always be friends with those guys, and with Rodney, he and I had a very close relationship, have a very close relationship, and it's fun to hear about his family and the things that he's doing outside of football. It'd never be conversations football specific, but it's just it's nice to be able to catch up on a personal level when we have an opportunity.
Eric, do you see anything different with Tom Brady this year other than having a new receiving core?
Tom was impressive from the day that he got in the building, from the perspective of the way that he worked, and regardless of whether he was on the not even the third quarterback, but just being able to work with guys after practice, there was an intensity about it. When he did get the opportunities that he got, he had the same approach. As he's gotten more and more successful and more accolades, he hasn't changed his work ethic, his intensity, his selflessness. None of that has affected who he is, and I think that he'll get better and better each year because his work ethic doesn't change regardless of what happens externally.
Eric, can you elaborate on the accomplishment of the Patriots thus far? Just, I think, beating every division opponent, winning on the road against Indy and Dallas. And, you know, obviously they've won Super Bowls before. You've been part of it. But this seems to be just a little different so far. I know they haven't won a Super Bowl yet, but it seems to be different. What's striking about this season, if anything?
It's in a lot of ways very similar to past seasons in the sense that each one of the players approaches the game, I'm sure, with absolute focus and intense preparation, and then go out and execute at a high level. And that's what you're looking for from your team at all points is the ability to have good weeks of preparation and then carry that preparation over into execution. And they've got a lot of talented players and coaches that work extremely hard, and that's really the reason for their success.
Coach, 3-10 is obviously not where you want to be. You've talked about the rivalry and considering what the Pats are going for. How much would a win in this game mean to you?
Winning every week is important to us, and it's no different this week in the sense that this is a division opponent that's won the division quite a few years now and has a high level of success, and we know how challenging it'll be to go in there and execute the game plan and do the things that we need to do to win the game. And all the external things are things that you can't focus on and can't look at because there's so much other work to do that's going to affect the outcome.
That being said, Eric, do you understand why people are so obsessed with this whole relationship, not only between the teams, but between the two personalities that lead the teams?
I completely appreciate the interest, and I respect all the questions that I've gotten. I understand that it's important to ask those questions, and you've got groups of passionate fans and passionate people, and I completely understand that.
Does any part of you wish what happened didn't happen?
You know, with that issue, it's an issue that's a league matter, was handled by the league and is in the past, and really, I've said all that I can say on it.
Would it bother you if you and Bill never spoke ever again?
You know, I've told you how I feel about Bill, and I've got a lot of respect for him, and he's done a lot for me in my career, and nothing's changed from the first time that we played him.
Eric, just as a point of get the facts straight, on talk shows up here, it's always depicted that you blew away, you know, you dropped the dime, you blew the whistle. Did you have anything personally to do with that incident that happened in the first game?
Again, I do appreciate that they have to ask these questions, but really, in terms of that whole issue, it's really a league matter, and I said all that I can say.
Okay.
Eric, there's a report in Newsday that a Jets employee was asked to leave Gillette Stadium last season, possibly for videotaping their coaches. Is that an accurate report?
What we do every away game is we tape our team from both end zones whenever it's possible. We always ask for permission to do that. Usually it's granted, provided there's a physical space to do that. It's to get the same angle that you get in practice. And anybody that asks us to do it, we extend the same courtesy. It's pretty common one way or the other, depending on how teams like to look at their game tape. And that's really what it was.
In other words, you thought you had permission, but perhaps you didn't?
No, we had permission.
And they still asked you to leave then?
Yes, they did.
One question about, I saw you asked it earlier in the week by the New York media, was on the tainting of the three Super Bowl wins here in New England. And, I mean, yes or no, do you feel that what's happened here, game one, and what's happened throughout this season, the Spygate controversy, has that tainted what the Patriots have accomplished?
The teams that won those Super Bowls were made up of hardworking guys that prepared extremely hard and executed well on Sunday, and that's what it was. And I respect those teams and those players and those people, and they did an outstanding job during the course of those seasons.
Eric, do you expect this game to be any more emotional than the other 13 you've played?
It's the next opponent, and it's I understand all the external things that are associated with it. But if you worry about that or look at that or spend time thinking about that, whether it's any one of the different issues involved, you lose track of what's so important, and that's preparing for a really challenging team in all three phases.
When you were here with the Patriots, did they do the type of videotaping that they got in trouble for doing?
As I said, I've really said all I can say about this matter.
Anything else, guys?
Eric, can I ask you about a guy you coached here, Asante Samuel? Do you think he's not one of the top couple corners in the game? And how challenging is it when teams aren't even throwing him? I'm not even sure Pittsburgh threw a ball in his direction last week to the guy he was covering. How hard is it for a corner to keep his head in the game when that's going on?
It was when we drafted Asante and Eugene, that was a really fun year because you saw two young guys. Gino ended up going back to safety, but two guys that really developed together. And the thing with Asante that was so impressive on college tape and then when he got to the team is his instincts and his ball skills. Excellent hands, excellent understanding of when to break, where the routes are going, and I used to give him a hard time all the time because he could pretty much intercept any ball that came to him, and when he didn't have two or three of practice, I'd ask him why not, because he's got that special ability that some corners have.
when you see game film, do you see them opponents just going on the other side consistently?
It's different. Each opponent and everybody has a different way to attack them. But you know, with Asante, that he does have the ability to turn the ball over or create a turnover at any point, and I'm sure each team assesses the risk-reward differently.
Eric, you've coached against some great offenses here as a coordinator, as a defensive coach, and now as a head coach. Is this the best offense you've ever coached against?
Each offense is different. The Rams were extremely challenging the year that amounts of points, and Indy's always been difficult, and you face different challenges from different offenses. New England has the ability to run the football effectively, to throw the football effectively. Every one of their skill players can score and can hurt you at any point. The offensive line is extremely well coached, and the quarterback has a great understanding of what the defense is trying to do and where he can exploit it.
So, yes?
I'd say that each one presented different challenges, but this is an outstanding offense.
Eric, do you expect to participate in that traditional post-game handshake, and do you look forward to seeing Bill if you do?
I don't expect to do anything outside the norm that I do every game with every head coach that I play against.
Obviously, being a 27-point underdog is a reflection of the competition you're playing, but is it at all, do you think your players at all sort of view that as perhaps disrespectful to them, and might they channel that into further motivation?
Well, none of the players bet on football or set lines, and that's something that's for Vegas to do or for whoever does that. I'm not really sure how it works, but again, that's one of those things that are externally part of the game and don't really affect the outcome.
Do you feel like this is your Super Bowl?
I feel like this is an opportunity for us to continue to down the path that we've continued in terms of the progress that we've made, especially lately in a lot of key areas, and you get a chance to play an outstanding team and on the road, a division opponent, and that's the challenge we face.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Eric.
Eric, thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Eric Mangini again, who, of course, is the head coach of the New York Jets, a former defensive coordinator for the Patriots, and certainly telling, he's a little bit more forthcoming in his forthright response to questions about Spygate and everything else that, you know, would deal with that, like the handshake at midfield after the game and all that kind of stuff. But, a little bit more so than maybe Bill Belichick is. But suffice it to say, he's probably also been told no more on the subject, even though you're going to get questions that'll ask you about that, no more on the subject, and that pretty much ends that. And so I guess then some of those answers were rather predictable, but then again, now you get a little bit more of an understanding of the context in which those questions were asked, and that's why we like doing this for you every week on the conference calls, playing them for you here, because not only do you get the answers, they're not, it doesn't leave anything to figure on your own. I mean, you hear the question, you hear the answer, and that's it. You know, you get the full context, and I guess sometimes you need that whenever there are so many things that can be misconstrued. Let's finish up with a couple of emails here, and then we'll get you inside the Patriots locker room, let you know what the players are thinking about the matchup with the Jets on Sunday. That, of course, is most important here. John sends this. He says, "This definitely reeks of conspiracy. Here's the issue I have. Everyone is going to say, let it go. It's no big deal." And he says, "The hell it's not. The implications by the Jets at the start of the season have turned us into the most hated team in the NFL in recent memory. Just because we're having this monster season does not excuse their actions." He says, "This reminds me of the Colts piping in crowd noise. We, the cheaters, won, so the issue is completely dismissed. Who would dare question the Colts? Now here it is again. A worthless team, the Jets, caught cheating. I promise nothing will happen." So, all right, well, I understand that. A lot of people do want, basically tit for tat where this is concerned. But, because the NFL is not going to – my own personal thought here is, John, that because the NFL doesn't know about the Jets' alleged cheating because the Patriots never reported it, I don't know that there's anything that they can do about it. Had this been an issue the Patriots reported and they said, "I will keep an eye on it," well, then maybe. Who knows? And maybe just because it has been an overwhelming topic of conversation throughout the entire NFL season, maybe they make a couple of phone calls and check up on it. I can't answer that question, but I can understand your point of view. I can see both sides. People who would say, hey, just let it go, and others that would say, no, don't let it go. You know, hold the Jets to the same standards that we were held to. Maybe. Let's see. All right, let's see if we can grab a couple of more here. Let's go to Pat. Says, sup, John, seeing Anthony Smith getting burned on Sunday was extremely satisfying, then Brady getting in his face. Belichick saying they played against better safeties, and even Jim Nantz and Phil Simms were ripping him too. Man, seemed like he was stuck in one of those Southwest Airline commercials. Want to get away? It's actually pretty good. Pretty good, Pat. Is it true what those guys were saying on WEEI, the Jets safety Kerry Rhodes was talking about the Pats and saying something like, I'm not going to guarantee anything, or saying anything that any controversy towards that team, and hopefully we don't get beat too badly? I don't know. I don't know that I heard. I heard Kerry Rhodes say, I'm not going to guarantee anything, but I did not hear him say, and I have not read the quote, hopefully we don't get beat too badly. I did not see that. Anyway, he says there's some confidence. I don't know if they were joking, but that cracked me up. They played a rough game against the Brownies. I really don't think they'll have anything left to put up much of a fight against possibly the greatest team of all time. And there will be no handshake. Patriots are going to bring to Robert Kraft Ratgenie's head on a plate. Oh, bring to Robert Kraft Ratgenie's head on a plate, I see. Snow or no snow, there's no way the Jets don't lose big. He says 33-6 Pats. That's actually not a... not a bad score. Let's see. And then let's... do we have, that's it. Okay, good. There we go. All right, so thank you for the emails. Good stuff today. As always, get some great comments. And, you know, if you're not, you know, dead on with some of the questions and some of the comments, it's always something to make me chuckle. I want you to know I appreciate that wholeheartedly. All right, let's wrap up today's program by getting you inside the Patriots locker room. And on the docket, as far as the interviews for you today, are in this order: Wes Welker, Ty Warren, Rodney Harrison, Benjamin Watson, Mike Vrabel, and Asante Samuel, as the Pats get ready for, dare I say it, another Snow Bowl. Coming up on Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern, the kickoff at Gillette Stadium, with the bad weather headed this way and the Jets headed this way as well. Let's get inside the Pats locker room, and then we'll be back same Pats time, same Pats channel tomorrow.
Wes, a lot of people would say that, you know, in light of all the Videogate nonsense, that the Jets possibly could be responsible for lighting a fire under you guys. Do you agree with that as far as them, you know, giving you all some extra motivation heading into a long season?
I don't think so. You know, I think we're just, you know, trying to do our jobs out there and do the best we can with that. And you know, that's all we can do.
Wes, how does Mother Nature affect you personally as a wide receiver?
You know, doesn't affect it at all. You know, we're just going out there and doing the best we can and make sure we focus in and you know, get ready for the weekend.
Have you played many games in the snow?
I haven't. You know, it'll be definitely something new, but you know, it's one of those deals that you gotta get used to and focus in and make sure you're out there doing your job.
In a sense, could you all possibly, you know, try to play for the coach, you know, the old 1-1 for the Gipper, since, you know, that this team has had some history with you guys?
I think we all, you know, every game play for each other and make sure that, you know, we're in this thing together and you know, make sure that, you know, everybody's doing their job and ready to go on Sunday.
Do you even pay attention to, I don't want to say, history of rivalries and things like that as a player in this locker room? Do you even pay attention to it?
You know, not really too much. You know, I think, you know, every week is the same, and you focus the same, and you prepare the same, and you know, make sure you're ready to go, just as if you know, you're playing a team that wasn't a rival.
How much have the Jets changed, at least defensively, that you've seen since week one? Week one being, you know, a wild card, no one knows what to expect from the team, and now we're 14 weeks later. How much have you seen them change on the field?
You know, I mean, you know, they're still playing hard, and you know, they haven't really changed too much at all. You know, they've had some personnel changes and things like that, but other than that, you know, their defenses are the same, and you know, they do a good job game planning and you know, mixing it up quite a bit.
Wes, this was a unique week. What was Coach's message to you guys this week?
You know, same message as always. You know, we just need to focus in and make sure that we're doing out there doing our jobs and preparing well and make sure we're ready.
Where do you think this team is at right now after the Steelers game, two close games before that? Do you like where you guys are?
We're in good position right now we need to continue to get better and make sure that, you know, we're doing all the right things to stay prepared. Thank you all.
Thanks.
Ty Warren.
Footing or not, how do you plan for something like that?
I think the footing is pretty much, you know, the most important thing for down linemen in the snow games.
And about this Jet game, we all know what happened after week number one and the press coverage you guys got after that. Is there a revenge factor for this game this weekend, or like we always do, are we overblowing this?
It doesn't matter. It didn't matter then, and it doesn't matter now. So,
all right.
Yes.
Stuff like that doesn't enter into your mind in a week like this. Strictly get another win and get to 14-0.
That's it. Just try to go out there, prepare, and try to get a win out there on Sunday. That's the only focus here. We can't focus on, you know, what was said in the past or whatnot. So we just focus on us.
How's that focus a little different? Is it more focused because of the history between the teams and because of week one? I mean, fair to say?
People look at it, you know, in a lot of different ways. But, you know, for us, like I said, you know, it really don't matter to us what was said, what was thought or what's speculated. You know, the only thing that matters is what these guys think in the locker room. We know what we need to do in order to go out there and prepare for those guys. And we know they're going to give us our best shot. And, you know, they don't got much to lose. So, you know, we're expecting for them to, you know, throw the kitchen sink at us.
Is it tough to play a team like that sometimes? Because, like you said, they have nothing to lose.
Only thing they got to do is a game, you know what I mean? And they can throw the kitchen sink at us if they want to. So, you know, we're just expecting unexpected.
In a weird twist of way, could you thank the Jets for possibly lighting a fire under you all for the whole season?
The fire was lit in all season, you know, because all the work we put in and things like that. So, you know, we always want to expect to go out there and do our best, no matter what the circumstances are. So, and that's every team's goal, you know, just a matter of just going out there and doing it. And, for the most part, we've been able to do that.
Is there a difference between December football as opposed to football earlier in the year in preparation or intensity?
Well, I think just the fact that everybody's more well-prepared, everybody has enough film to watch, everybody's game ready, you know, so it makes it difficult sometimes because, you know, people are playing a lot better than they were early on in the season, and I'm sure the Jets will.
Do you ever pay attention to what the fans are saying in a particular week? Or, you know, I mean, all the talk is of Phil and Eric and everything else. Do you ever pay attention to that as a player, not even as a guy going out to play in a big game like that, but just kind of casually listening as the week goes on?
Not really. I mean, most of what I hear is from family and friends, you know. So, and they pretty much relate whatever's said, by the fans. So, you know, pretty much everything I hear is from family and friends.
Does it amuse you? How do you take what's being said on a week like this? Does it drive you? Does it motivate you at all?
I'm already motivated.
Yeah.
So it don't take much to get me motivated, you know, or any of these guys in here.
You've seen probably a lot of the Pittsburgh-New York Jets game from a couple weeks ago. What is it that you've seen from that game that, even though the Jets are 3-10, that shows you that they have enough that they can pull off an upset on any given week?
And that's a perfect example. You know, just the fact of how hard they played those guys, how they came away with the win, played those guys all the way to the brick. And if you look at it, the only two games that didn't seem to be a contest was our first game against them and the Cowboys game, but every other game has been to the wire. So, you know, we expect them to come out there and play hard and just like anybody else that we got remaining on the schedule, you know, everybody's looking to be that team to knock us off. So we look at it in that sense.
Is there anything specific about their offense when Kellen Clemens is under center, different from what you've been used to with Chad Pennington?
Well, you know, he's a lot more mobile, and it seems like, you know, his arm is pretty strong, too, and he seems to get the ball there pretty accurately. So I think the more time and more game experience he has, he's going to be a factor for that offense in the future.
Thanks.
and maybe even this week.
Thank you.
Rodney Harrison.
You watch film, don't you?
Well, I watch the games. I don't get the film that you guys watch.
Yeah. It's all over. Close to the line, away from the line, deep.
And how does your job description change depending on where you're lining up? You have to be more. Is it anything more for the run game? Is it more for passing?
Sometimes I'm over a tight end. Sometimes I'm over a wide receiver. Sometimes I'm deep. Sometimes I'm in the middle. Sometimes I'm just all over the place, wherever they put me. I'm not going to answer that question. It's just not. It's just.
No, I understand.
I can't give up any strategy. That's not.
I understand, but you explained it pretty well. Mm-hmm. You guys can jump in anytime you want.
When you look at this week, you know, there's so much talk outside, as you know, of this locker room.
I don't know.
Well, you know, the fans are into the whole rivalry and what have you. As Ty Warren was saying, is it strictly just 14-0 win this week as our motivation, like it's been every week?
One game at a time. We're not focused on all the nonsense that's going on, and I'm not looking at any ESPN or reading any newspapers or even thinking about what someone says. So for us, it's just a matter of us being focused on the next game. It's the most important game because it's the next game, and not worrying about anything else.
What do you look at much at week one? What can you tell from the team, I guess, week one to now, how different they are? What can you gain from
I was sitting on my couch in week one. So, yeah. I mean, their last few weeks, they're a greatly improved team. They beat Pittsburgh, very competitive with the Cleveland Browns. They could have had opportunity to win that ball game. Thomas Jones, he's running a lot better. The wide receivers are some of the toughest ones we face. So, and Lemon, I mean, he poses a threat. I mean, he can run the ball. He can still throw the ball. And we just have to go out there and execute.
Is this team playing with a little bit of anger or chip on its shoulder? I mean, the fallout from the Jets, you may not think about it, but I mean, you certainly know that people are questioning the validity of the previous championships. Has that spurred you guys on this year?
Has nothing to do with what we're trying to focus on. Has nothing to do with what we're trying to accomplish. If you're playing football in National Football League, you better play with a chip. You better play angry and ticked off. I mean, if you're not, you're going to get beat down, and that's just the way it goes. I mean, this is a sport for grown men, and if you're a little boy, it's no place for you.
So this year is no different than any year you've played professional football?
At all. You play with a chip. You play with a passion. You play with anger. It's just part of being a professional athlete in National Football League.
Is Bill especially good at, triggering? He's a very good motivator. Is he especially good at sort of pushing those kind of buttons during a long season?
Well, I mean, that's part of a coach's job is to motivate. Know when to ride you and know when to back off, and he's had success doing it his way, whatever his way is, and we respond to it. And you know, but it takes each and every individual in this locker room to step up and to man up and do their job. You know, it's not a matter of coach saying this is what you need to do. It's a matter of us just getting our butts together, knowing that what we have to do, and going out there executing the game plan.
So do you ever use extra motivation? You know, little things that happen during a week, does that ever affect your game when you step on the field on Sunday?
Well, I'm already extremely motivated, but
right. It
just depends on what's said.
You guys cheated? Does that motivate you?
It means nothing because I don't even know your first name, so you said that. It really doesn't matter, and that's nothing personal to you, but that's just the truth. Who cares what you think or anyone else thinks?
Has the video game thing motivated you guys though?
I don't know anything about it. Like I said, I was sitting on my couch when all that crap happened. I don't know anything about it, so you're asking the wrong person. We're so excited to play the Jets this week and try to get to 14-0. That's our only focus.
Excuse me. Does weather affect you one way or the other? There's possibility of a big snowstorm on Sunday. Does that affect you guys in anything you do?
Just probably dress a little warmer, that's it.
Rodney, you've made a couple of really good plays the last couple of weeks. Are you happy with where you are at this stage of the season, personally, the way you're playing?
Just trying to do my job. It's not for me to analyze what I'm doing, anything like that. Just doing my job, you know, and trying to help this team win. If that means making a bunch of tackles or making no tackles, just doing my job. That's what it's about. If I get an opportunity to make a play, hopefully I can make it because I prepared myself well to do that.
How about the defense as a whole? Do you feel like the performance has been where you guys would like it, or has it been a little inconsistent?
I mean, obviously the red zone has been an issue. We've struggled in that area, in the goal line. But each and every week, you know,
serves really a different challenge for us. I mean, it's been tough, you know, sitting back there and just, you know, I've been in a situation where we've been one of the best red zone defenses in the league, and all of a sudden we're one of the worst. But you can't get any worse than what we've been, so you can only get better. So we're focusing on that area as well as some other areas, tackling.
How hard is it to get to that consistency, which you talked about? You said after the game the other night that, you know, you played Patriots football, physical football. How hard is it, from what you've seen, to get to that?
I mean, you can get to it, but I think the tough part is just being consistent, doing it time and time again. And, I mean, we've had that. We need to keep that. We have the guys to do that. It's just a matter of us making up our minds and doing it and physically going out there carrying on what we intend to do. So it's no special formula. It's just us doing it because we know we have the guys to do it. If we didn't, I mean, we wouldn't be where we're at now.
What has Kellen Clemens done to make this offense a little bit better, or is he any different in shape? Are y'all preparing a different?
Some of the players, he's capable of scrambling outside the pocket. I mean, he has a big arm, and he's made plays down the field. So, I mean, any quarterback in National Football League can hurt you, especially ones that can run with their legs. Is that it?
Thank you.
Ben Watson.
Giving you all motivation throughout the whole
season. I won't give him that much credit, you know. Like I said, that whole thing, you know, week one was you know, so long ago. And, you know, as a team, we just focused on going on executing every Sunday, you know, and beating the opponent that we're playing that week. You know, nothing from that game is you know, hanging over till now.
Do you ever use that as motivation, or is winning every week in the NFL pretty much your motivation?
That's pretty much the motivation. You know, that's it. I mean, it's a tough league. You know, anybody can beat you, and we work really hard. We prepare, you know, for these, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So when we get out there, we want to have fun on Sunday. So, again, you know, it's going to be a great game. You know, we're playing a good team, and, you know, you can kind of throw all that directs and everything out the window when we play each other.
You know week one, you know what happened, you know all the hype, you know what the fans are saying this week. Do you ever listen to it? Do you get amused by it? How do you react to it?
You kind of put your wall up, you know, kind of like there's no windows in this locker room. There's kind of no windows on this team. You know, we kind of just try to focus on what's going on here within and not really worry about what's happening on the outside. You know, at the end of the season, then we can go look at all the newspaper clippings.
Mike Vrabel.
And then after the game, there was some revelation that, yeah, we were going after him a little bit, and then we were happy.
Well, I mean, I didn't throw any of those passes. I didn't catch any of those balls. I mean, if they, you know, this league is about matchups, and if you see favorable matchups, certainly you go after them.
There's a report in New York Newsday today that the Jets were caught spying on the Patriots last year. Someone was kicked out, apparently, of Gillette Stadium for illegally videotaping. I don't know if you had heard about that, but if you had, what do you think about that?
I don't know. I think there's a lot that goes on that we don't know about and people don't know about. I mean, you know, you're just trying to get an advantage. I would imagine that everybody's trying to do what they can.
A win in this game would be just a win like any other game.
Oh, certainly it would be, you know, a big one because it's, you know, the Jets, and then, you know, we try to take care of every team in our division, and you know, they know us well, we know them well. You're familiar with the players. It's the same offensive guys I've been going against for the last couple years, and so there's some familiarity there.
The one thing that's not familiar for you guys is quite as far as playing. So what type of difference does he make in quarterback?
Well, I mean, I think he's a bigger guy. He's a little more mobile, you know, than Chad. I don't know if he's got the grasp of the offense that Chad does at this point. I think that, you know, I just remember him coming in late in our game and running around, making some plays and trying to throw the ball around. So, you know, he's a bigger mobile guy, close to Roethlisberger, but not, you know, not quite there yet. You know, I'm sure he would, you know, like to be there, but certainly kind of that kind of style.
Mike, would you ever say that there's a personal motivation in any of these games that you play?
I think there's personal motivation for a lot of guys. I mean, guys go out and play hard for different reasons. You know, but to say that, you know, it's against Eric or against the Jets, no, I mean, we try to go out and play hard, and we try to play as well as we can every week.
How does the familiarity change the way you game plan?
Well, I think that, you know, you look and see what they've had success with against you, what you kind of do well, what you haven't done well against a certain player, and you have to understand that they're going to be looking at the same film and they're going to try to attack what you didn't do well.
Asante Samuel.
Guess we can't get out of this one, huh?
Is this personal? Some people like to say that this game, because of Spygate, is personal.
No, it's not personal. It's just business. Football is what we do. This is how we pay our bills and take care of our family. And, you know, we're just going out. It's another game. You know, we want another win, and we're going to go out and play hard and play Patriot football.
Does it cross your mind at all, any of the stuff from week one?
No, we're not worried about that. It's another game. You know, we played them once, you know, and we want to go out and play them again and play them hard and play them tough the way we did the first time. All the other stuff, you know, that was in the media and the Spygate and all that stuff, you know, it doesn't matter to us.
In a small way, the stuff they did in week one, could that be used as motivation that they woke up a sleeping giant, a team that was already picked to win the Super Bowl? They just lit your fire a little bit more?
No, not at all. I mean, they're a good team, you know. They're playing better the second half of the season. They're playing a whole lot better than what people think, you know. Maybe their record doesn't show it, but they're playing real good football. One or two plays here and there, you know, make them win the game, and we got to go out and go out prepared and play hard.
Does the Pittsburgh game give you a little bit of, from their end, what they did, does that kind of wake you up a little bit too, as far as the potential is there for them to do something to you?
Yeah, like I said, no doubt. You know, they won that game. They had a lot of other close games like that. And if they could play Pittsburgh that tough, you know, they could play us tough. And you know, we got to go out prepare like it's any other game, like we're playing against an undefeated team. And we're going to do that, and we're going to prepare hard, we're going to practice hard, and we're going to come out prepared.
Does snow factor into any of this? Is it tougher to cover receivers when the footing is not solid?
You just have to be aware of what's going on. If you know it's snowing, wear the right cleats. If you know it's possibility of snow, rain, wear the right cleats. So, I mean, it's slipping will always be a issue if it's snowing or raining, you know, with the field turf. So, you know, you just got to come out prepared.
Is it harder to play defense in those conditions in your mind?
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, I mean, you see a lot more slipping when it's snowy or it's raining and it's cold. You see a lot more slipping. You know, guys can't come in and out of their breaks fast as they want. We can't break on the ball as hard as we can. The ball is more slippery. Can't catch it as easy. I mean, for the receivers, the same thing. So whatever the conditions are, you know, we come out prepared for it.
Santi, is it a challenge for you when they don't throw to you the guy you're covering?
Is it a challenge for me?
Yeah.
How can it be a challenge?
Well,
what do you mean?
Did Pittsburgh throw one ball at your guy? I mean, you got your hands on one, but you weren't covering Ward on the play. I don't know if you threw one ball at the guy you were covering.
If they throw my way or not, you know, I just try to help my team out best as I can. So if they're not throwing my way, then maybe that's helping my team. You know, maybe we could do something to help the other side make plays. And, you know, I don't feel that way. I feel every team, you know, is never scared of me. They're going to come throwing at me. And, you know, this is how I prepare and this is how I get ready for the game.